Hey everybody, welcome back to the Pep Talk. On today's episode, we have a certain spooky guest joining us. Our guest? The ghost of George Pepperdine himself. What started as a casual series of posts on X, formerly known as Twitter, about Pepperdine's past has grown into an insightful and often provocative chronicle of Pepperdine's past, present, and maybe its soul on Substack. In today's episode, we'll dive into why this well-informed yet anonymous source is haunting Malibu in the afterlife, why Founders Day might be a second founding, and what Ronald Reagan, AstroTurf, and patriotic lapel pins all have to do with Malibu. Ghost of George Pepperdine, welcome to the Pep Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, we are so excited to hop into it today. Kobe, do you want to ask the first question with the ghost?
Totally. Well, it's good to have you on here, George. I may call you George at times throughout this. If any of you who are following the ghost of George Pepperdine already, you may know it's a little bit of an open secret that this is a beloved member of the Pepperdine community, but began as an anonymous attempt at sort of uncovering some of Pepperdine's history. You've said in the past that part of your motivation was, and I quote here, a desire to make sure the university remained haunted by the ideas of its founder. And so just to start off, what would you say those founding ideas are that you think deserve to be remembered? What's kind of the vision of this thing called the Ghost of George Pepperdine that many in the community have come to know and love?
Well, Kobe, I'm glad to come on the pod today. I think the idea that's at the center of Pepperdine, the idea that underlies the university, is this notion that not only that academic excellence and Christian values can coexist in a modern university, but even stronger, that our spiritual commitment demands the highest standards of academic excellence, that it tolerates no excuse for mediocrity, as our university affirmation statement says. In other words, the idea at the heart of Pepperdine is that you can't divorce the university's twin commitments to scholarship on the one hand and to Christianity on the second hand. I think that's a really powerful idea that Pepperdine has inherited from the founding in 1937, and it's one that we're lucky still to be haunted by today.
It's really good, and I'm sure we'll get kind of into more of the nitty-gritty of how you see that playing itself out in the life of the university, and I think that that is something that is particularly distinct and special about Pepperdine. As we go back in time, right, I'm sure this is something that you as a member of the community probably had sort of in mind and sort of inculcated by the spirit of Pepperdine when you were here as a student and other things. But what kind of made you decide, based on that, what I can do is start an anonymous kind of funny Twitter account as the ghost of George Pepperdine? Can you walk us through the thought process there in the early days at all and kind of how it developed?
I love Pepperdine. And in my boredom, I started tweeting about Pepperdine sometimes, and I thought that it would be funny if my handle on Twitter was Ghost of George Pepperdine. As if the founder had come back to haunt the university after all these years.
I will say, if you're familiar with Fizz, there are other people who have kind of taken up the mantle from you on there. Maybe lesser versions, but imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Different ghost of fill in the blank Pepperdine figure accounts that I've seen since then.
I love it. So what started there on Twitter as just me tweeting one-offs about Pepperdine history, commenting on Pepperdine news and so on, slowly developed until I started wanting a space to post longer form content. And in particular, I had this story I wanted to write about Pepperdine's ban on social dancing way back in the early days of the college. And I had heard stories about this, that dances used to be banned at Pepperdine. And I really wanted to tell that story more fully and more accurately than it had ever been told before. I hadn't heard the details in the rumor mill. And so as I started looking into it more, reading archival sources and so on, I found out that really the story of social dancing at Pepperdine is a story about a university that's wrestling with what it means to maintain their commitment to Christian living among these pressures from the secular world.
Wow.
So that's when I started. I've started a Substack to post this longer essay about the history of social dancing at Pepperdine, and that's where we are today.
And kind of from there, that became other deep dives into the sort of history and culture of Pepperdine. There's a phrase you've used that I really like, where you've said you want to contribute to institutional myth making. And I hear you getting into a little bit of that topic already in what you've said so far. I think that's a loaded phrase in a good way. Can you unpack what does that mean for an institution, for a university or other type of institution to have an institutional myth, a story that it tells about itself? Why do you think that's important? And maybe at Pepperdine in particular, what can and should that look like?
Yeah, I think when you're dealing with the culture of an institution, whether it's a university or a church or a nation state, that the culture is shaped by the stories that the institution tells, and not just the stories that it tells, but the stories that it tells about itself and to itself. Mm-hmm. And I think that the reason that these stories matter so much is that individual people and programs and buildings and even whole campuses come and go over time. I think about how Pepperdine's original campus in Los Angeles is hardly even remembered anymore, especially among the younger students today. Mm-hmm. And fewer people at the university today ever met George Pepperdine or have any memory of him. But even though those people in those campuses have passed away, the myths of the institution, its memes, right, the ideas that it stands for, those can last beyond the lifetime of any one person. Hmm. And so part of my project is that if you want to improve an institution like Pepperdine, if you want to improve its culture, then what you want to do is be improving and rewriting the stories that the institution tells itself about itself.
So when you have an idea, like the dancing story, your first story that you had on Substack, where do you go to find these primary sources? What books, archives, where do you go first when you're on this hunt?
There have been some really excellent works of university history published by the Pepperdine University Press, among which are David Baird's magisterial account of the history of the university in the 20th century called Quest for Distinction, the memoir of the fourth president, William S. Banowski, called Malibu Miracle, and also the 50th anniversary history called Crest of a Golden Wave. I have all of those books. And what's more, I have access to a lot of primary sources that are available online through the library's digital collections. Mm-hmm. And also, I sometimes, when I'm visiting Malibu, will go to the university archives at Payson Library and read through some of the unique materials that only exist in the files of past presidents and other figures.
Wow, that's awesome. I love all the imagery that you have on your Substack too. Some of these pictures I've never seen before, so it's great that you've spent the time to find all of them. So thank you for doing
that. Yeah, those pictures are almost universally courtesy of the university archives, which is a tremendous resource I encourage everyone to go check out online.
That's
really
awesome.
Cool. Well, this is a special Founders Day edition of Pep Talk. So I think we'd be remiss while we've got you here if we didn't talk about Founders Day a bit. In your essay, you talk about the 1975 Seaver dedication as one of the greatest achievements in 20th century academia. And this is, I think, one among a couple of days that we look back on when we think about Founders Day. Why do you give it that level of significance, would you say?
Well, I would say a couple things. First, the Founders Day tradition as it is currently practiced with the recitation of George Pepperdine's 1937 dedicatory address. That goes all the way back to the very, very beginning of the college back in Los Angeles. This event in 1975 at the dedication of Seaver College, not George Pepperdine College, came later. But you're right to say it comes at the end of this spectacular achievement that has rarely been equaled in the history of American higher ed, when the Malibu campus had just been built and Seaver College was just now being dedicated, just opening in 1972. So in order to see what this accomplishment was like, you have to remember back to what Pepperdine College was like in 1957, when Norval Young, the college's third president, first came to Los Angeles. At that point, little George Pepperdine College had almost no money. It had very few friends that were capable of giving it any money. It had an aging campus. It was in this neighborhood in South Los Angeles, what is sometimes called South Central Los Angeles, that was suffering from urban decay progressively through the 50s and into the 60s. And So it's in a pretty bad spot. And then fast forward just 18 years to 1975, when we have this dedication of Seaver College. And at that point, the university had grown by many thousands of students. It had opened three graduate schools, including schools of business and law and education. It all of a sudden has many powerful friends, including the president of the United States at the time, Gerald Ford. It's got campuses around California and would soon have campuses all around the world. And of course, this moment in Malibu is the crossing the finish line for this long race that they've been running all the way back from 1957 in South Los Angeles to this moment when Pepperdine can finally say, here we are, we're totally unlike we've been, and we're ready to step onto the world stage.
It's really cool.
Wow. So I guess, building off of your article, who are some other lesser-known founders of Pepperdine that we could maybe highlight at Founders Day, or you think should be highlighted at Founders Day?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that ceremonies like Founders Day are such a perfect opportunity to do the sort of institutional myth-making I've been talking about. They can reinforce the stories that the institution tells itself about itself. Mm. It's a time we can set aside for the whole community to come together and to remember these important figures from our past. And I think that George Pepperdine, who is currently celebrated on Founders Day, does deserve a special place as the original founder of what was George Pepperdine College, now Pepperdine University. But I do sort of wonder, what if Seaver College, just one part of Pepperdine University, had a separate ceremony? Maybe in the spring, because we celebrate Founders Day in the fall, we could have a new secondary kind of Founders Day to celebrate Blanche Seaver, who made the crucial donations that have funded Seaver College. And if we're going to do that for Seaver College, we could have other days to celebrate Grazia Dio, who is the namesake of the business school, and to celebrate Rick Caruso, who is the namesake of the law school. So those would be my nominations for additional founders.
The Pepperdine Mount Rushmore. Maybe we start building up on the
That's right.
Hike to the cross somewhere. Put those four or five faces up.
Yeah, and you could also do a Pepperdine President's Day celebration where we celebrate and honor and remember the stories of past presidents. So we've got a whole pantheon of heroes in the history of Pepperdine to choose from, and I would be happy to see any of them being celebrated.
Hmm. And I think I would love to hear from you for a second here as we kind of think about Pepperdine's past and present and future, which are things that aren't or shouldn't be divorced from one another. You have this idea of this institutional myth of Pepperdine and of this particular vision of George Pepperdine and of other leaders from the past in the university that is kind of this distinct combination of faithfulness and excellence. And these two things not being contradictory to one another, but in a true sense, as a faith-forward university being called to excellence, what would you say it looks like in particular for Pepperdine to carry forward its use a loaded phrase, its quest for distinction into the 21st century and beyond? What does it look like as the world changes, the vision for higher education changes, AI, technology, uncertainty about higher ed? What does it look like for Pepperdine to be truly Pepperdine now and into the future?
Well, I think that some of the answers that you're looking for were actually shared by Ronald Reagan in the speech that he delivered in 1975 at the dedication ceremony for Seaver College. He talks about how the need for a good, strong liberal arts education at colleges like Pepperdine and like Seaver College was something that hadn't changed, even as the world around him at the time was changing so much. He talks about people landing on the moon. He talks about robots and computers. And he says that we still need to come back again and again to the liberal arts. Hmm. And I think that George Pepperdine would have agreed with that. And so I hope that Pepperdine will continue along that path.
That's awesome. Wow. It still rings true today. I think that's why Founders Day is so important. Okay. So on to some broad questions about being the ghost of George Pepperdine. So this is a question I came up with. So you, the ghost of George Pepperdine, are floating over campus today. Where do you linger? The cafeteria? The Freedom Wall? Somewhere off limits? Where are your favorite spots to haunt?
Well, one of the things I think of when I think about George Pepperdine is this very strange fact that he actually died 10 years before the Malibu campus ever opened, before Pepperdine ever owned the Malibu campus, in fact. And so to him, all Pepperdine ever was a little college in South Los Angeles on 34 acres in the Vermont Knolls neighborhood. He didn't know Malibu. And so he not only didn't, but really couldn't have had any favorite spots on the Malibu campus. But
if he did,
I will say, if he did, his favorite spot might be in the university archives that still today have a collection of some of his personal effects, his books and papers. And I'll tell you, it's an amazing experience to go down there and have the archivists bring up for you these old artifacts from George Pepperdine and to get to leaf through them and think, you know, these were George Pepperdine's own things.
That's amazing.
It's really cool.
Do you have a funny question you want to ask?
Oh, let's see.
I have another one, but if you have one.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. If you've got something to
I might cut this one out.
Wait, are you?
Sorry. Okay. What's the spiciest take you've tweeted?
Well, I've had a few good ones, but if I've learned anything from reading about Blanche Seaver, she was a very particular person. She liked things a certain way. She believed in her politics very strongly. Mm-hmm. And one of the stories that has been passed down is that whenever Blanche Seaver would appear in public with a companion after the death of her husband, she would insist that her companions always wear American flag pins on their lapels to show that they were true American patriots, just like her deceased husband, Frank Seaver, had been. And so I think if Blanche Seaver were around to read my tweets today, she would probably be upset that they didn't all end with an American flag emoji.
We need to do Blanche Seaver fashion icon, like a Substack article about everything she wore, because I find her outfits amazing.
Or that could be like the next, you know, like those the Waves Vault drop that Pepperdine had a while back.
Right.
Our next fashion drop could be Blanche Seaver inspired Pepperdine branded gear.
That's
one of the great moments during that 1975 dedication of Seaver College is during President Bonowski's speech when he tells a story about how Blanche was a very simple person. She didn't make much of herself. She was humble. And one of the ways that manifested itself was she would wear the same familiar gowns every year to her fancy dinners where she was, you know, rubbing shoulders with the glitzy and fabulous in Los Angeles. And she would always show up in the same dress every year.
So they remember her more, you know? It's smart.
That's right.
It's a strategy. That's awesome. You got one?
Well, I would love to hear, this is getting a little bit back on kind of a serious note, but George Pepperdine, as you kind of alluded to, founded, you know, he was like me. He was a Kansas boy coming out to California, sort of starting a new life. And he founds what he thinks of as a small Christian college, right? That's dedicated to training men and women, not only for jobs, but in the liberal arts and to be people of character, right? But as you said, in his mind, as far as he knows, when he passes away, it's sort of small potatoes in some ways. It's doing really good work. But he would have had no idea the degree to which it may have expanded, right? Pepperdine is now a premier, nationally recognized global university, 6 schools, international campuses. What do you think George would be most surprised by or proud of if he were to see Pepperdine in its current state?
I definitely think he would be surprised. I think he would be impressed, especially by the university's global reach these days. He was really well-traveled in his own day. He went on a trip around the world with his mother to visit Europe and Egypt and the Far East as well. But I think the thing that George Pepperdine cared the most about would be that the university today is still a place where professors are influencing students to live good Christian lives. That's what he really wanted. And I think that he would be pleased to know that that's still happening at Pepperdine today.
That's really cool. I'll bet he would love the how much faculty housing and student meals in faculty homes, real life-on-life mentorship is made possible by that compared to if there were a different kind of model. I think I've seen that really facilitated here.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Ghost of George Pepperdine. For our listeners, the Ghost of George Pepperdine is one of the most fascinating and insightful voices documenting Pepperdine's legacy and future. You can check out the Ghost of George Pepperdine on X at Ghost of George Pepperdine or on Substack, which we will link below. Ghost of George Pepperdine, thank you for joining us and for making sure Pepperdine is never too comfortable in its history, because ghosts, after all, only haunt the places they still care about. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
It's a good final line. I wonder who wrote that.